Well, good morning, my dear brethren and sisters, young people and friends. Welcome once again around the table of our absent Lord. And we do come together now around these memorial emblems to remember the life of Jesus, the life that Jesus lived in service to others. And we also come to thank our Heavenly Father for giving us Jesus and for providing a way of salvation that we all might have hope of eternal life to come in the kingdom. For the benefit of those listening online and on the phone, our brother Kent Wilson will lead us in words of exhortation. And the theme that he has chosen for this morning is "Nothing changes if nothing changes." Somewhat intriguing title there. But as an introduction to that, reading Romans chapter 12. Now I'll ask our brother Kent Wilson to come forward and to lead us in words of exhortation under his theme, "Nothing Changes If Nothing Changes." Thanks, Kent.
Thanks very much, John, and morning everybody. Lovely to see so many people here this morning, and happy smiling people as well. Normally when I speak, not so much here on a Sunday, but certainly at the university, it's not a case that you see happy, smiling people. Yeah, you often see people there, but they are there because they perhaps feel the necessity to be there. But you know what? All of us have made a conscious effort. We've made a decision that we want to be here. In fact, we need to be here. That's the decision that we've made. Hey, I just love Romans chapter 12. And, you know, if there was a single chapter in the Bible that I sort of want to elevate just perhaps a little bit more than others, it's Romans chapter 12. There's just so many things that emanate from this particular chapter. You could speak for hours. Thankfully, I'm not going to do that for you. But you really could. Wasn't there just so much in it as we looked at it? This is a chapter that speaks to us, I think, the challenge of discipleship. What does it mean to be a genuine disciple of Jesus Christ? You know, all of us have said that we want to commit our lives to Jesus, but Romans 12, this is a rubber meets the road sort of chapter. In a sense, I apologise for picking Romans 12. Last week, Stephen spoke on Romans 5, and the week before that, Graham spoke on Romans 15. So it looks like there's a bit of a theme emerging. I don't think Russell's going to pick Romans next week, so we're going to have a break from Romans. I do say I apologise because sometimes people think, well, why can't you sort of just take us in a slightly different direction? But this was our reading for Wednesday, and as I say, it's a chapter that means so much to me. And I just couldn't let it slide without wanting to speak about it. The real issue that we're faced with, it's all about, as verse 2 says, not to be conformed to this world. Isn't that just so challenging? It's easy to be conformed to this world, and I want to unpack that a little bit later on, but these are thoughts for all of us. It doesn't matter whether you've been a disciple of Christ, I suspect, for 50 years, 60 years, or whether you are just a new disciple. This is really what it comes down to. It's our allegiance. We've said we want to give our lives to Christ, but right there in front of us is the world. Yet we've got sort of short-term versus long-term, and this is always a challenge for our mind. It's a challenge for us to deal with those particular issues. And so we have to, as verse 2 says, we have to be transformed. And in a sense, that's really why I've said, you know, nothing changes if nothing changes. That's an expression that's often used in management literature. In other words, if we don't make changes, then the status quo will remain. For most of us, we would like certain things to change in our life, but if we do nothing about it, well, guess what happens? If nothing changes, nothing changes. We'll be familiar, of course, with that transformation process that Paul's alluding to here in verse 2. So the Greek word behind that is where we get our English word metamorphosis. So the idea of grub, yeah, ugly grub, going through to that beautiful butterfly. And that's really the picture that Paul is putting for us here in verse 2, that transformation process that we go through. And think about it, if the grub doesn't go through that chrysalis phase, go through into the cocoon, then it's not going to make it to be the butterfly. And the same analogy works for us. You know, while Paul can say in 1 Corinthians 15 that this corruptible must put on incorruption, there's a process. There's changes that need to take place within ourselves. Yes, it's really important. And we want to be incorruptible. We want incorruption. But for that to take place, that there's a change. And if nothing changes in our lives today, if nothing changes, then nothing will change at Christ's return. So this morning, we want to speak about change. And I want to set the stage, if I may, and to perhaps provide some level of context. And there's a little phrase that we often use when we speak about change. Change is hard because people overestimate the value of what they have. Think about that. Change is hard because people overestimate the value of what they have. This is the reason why, even in a secular sense, just in everyday, I'm not necessarily talking about spiritual, but the overtones of secular and spiritual do have a level of confluence. It's hard to make change because we overestimate where we are now. And the saying goes on, and we underestimate the value of what we may gain by giving that up. So in other words, what's that saying? It's saying that where we are today, the tangible aspects of our life, we place a high value on those. For anything where there's intangibility or something that's into the future, we tend to underestimate that. And as I say, that's something that has applicability regardless of whether we're talking secular, those things outside this hall, or whether we are focusing on the spiritual. Why is that the case? Why is that the case, that we have this sort of misalignment, we might say, with respect to values? It comes down to two words, comfort and zone, running them together. We all like a comfort zone. All of us like the status quo. So we like to sit in the same chairs on a Sunday morning. So if I'm looking down here, I'm going to expect that Mark and Anna will be there. Yeah, and I expect Daniel to be there, and I look down there. And if I look across here, the pictures are always three rows back. I look over here. Isn't it true, though? And if you look down, you'll know yourself. You sit in the same seat roughly all the time. Why is this the case? And you know what? It's not just limited to Christadelphian. So it's not as though we've got some sort of mindset that says, in the hall, bang, that's where I'm going to sit. This happens in lecture theatres. It happens in tutorial rooms. Yeah, and it perhaps, I would suggest, happens if you're catching public transport and you've got to catch the train, you'll jump in the third carriage every single time. Or you want to sort of sit on the bus seat, right, bang, that's my seat. What? Why is this? Well, this is just one of, I guess, the aspects of our DNA. And this is what makes change so challenging for us. Because we get into these routines, we get into these ruts. And don't go changing things on the shelves at Woolies. Seriously, at different times. So I'll go with, Joe, and all of a sudden they've made some changes. You know, the Promite isn't there anymore. That's jam, and Promite's down the end, or whatever the case is, or they've changed things up. We don't like it, do we? We like to have consistency in our lives. And as I say, this applies, I would suggest, in both the spiritual and the secular. We hate it when we are confronted with change. And apps change and various other things change. And they've changed it. And Google changed the other day with how it does things. And we're not good at dealing with change. So tip number one that I'm going to suggest is change up some of the small things in your life. Why do I say that? Because if you can change up some of the small things in your life, what does that actually do? That makes it so that our mind starts to be receptive to change. So Graham and Jenny, next Sunday, over that side of the hall. Yeah, that'll change things up. Joe, we're sitting on the other side of the hall next week. And you're probably saying, well, that wouldn't make a big difference. Do you know what? The literature actually begs to differ when it comes to change. Having small changes in our lives enables us to embrace greater change as well. And you know what? All of us need to embrace great change. Hey, here's a question to ask. How much has changed since your spiritual birth? And by the way, do you know when you were baptised? All of us celebrate our birthdays. I had one of those quite recently. Birthdays are good. We know all about that. Do you know? So if I was to ask you, and Mark's the first one I can look here, you don't have to say it, Mark. Doesn't matter. Do you know when you were baptised? And I'd venture to say Mark may know. There'd be people sitting here who probably think, oh, it was back in about whatever. Was that an important day in your life? Was that an important day in your life? I would say absolutely, fundamentally, this was. This was your spiritual rebirth. You know, Graham alluded to this a couple of weeks ago. You know, when we were freshly baptised, there was a singleness of mind that said, I want to serve the Lord. Why is this important? Well, initially, the title for this exhortation was going to be 2011 and counting. And when I thought about that, I thought, well, that's probably fairly cryptic, and that's even worse than sort of nothing changes if nothing changes. But I worked out it's 2011 Sundays since I was baptised. So I do actually know the date. And look, I'm probably one of those quirky ones, bit of OCD, who does know dates and various other bits and pieces. But when I thought about it, I thought, I've been dedicating my life to Christ. There's been at least 2,000 Sundays. And I'm not saying that I've been to the meeting for 2,000 Sundays or thereabouts. And if you've been baptised for as long as, say, Jeff or Steve or Maureen or Ted, then you'll add on sort of quite a few extra on top of that. And this is by no means laying any accusation to anybody. But how much have you really changed? How much have you changed? And if you were to reflect on 25 Sundays ago, beginning of the year, thereabouts, what sort of changes have you made this year in your life? Have you made any changes? And in asking you those questions, I'm asking myself these questions. So please don't think that Kent's got everything together. I haven't. I need to be reminded. And in fact, I think I've said this before. Every single topic that I present for an exhortation, the reason I pick it is because I needed to hear that message myself. I needed to have that constant reminder that I need to make changes in my life. There's too much conformity to the world in my life. I'd venture to say for some of us, we'd perhaps be lining up behind me. Some of you are in front of me and you've made greater and more possible changes. But there's just something to think about. How much has changed? Remember, nothing changes if nothing changes. If there's no real progress, then how can we hope to sort of say, well, look, God, I just want you to forgive me. Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? That's what the same writer said six chapters back. Yes, there is grace, there is forgiveness, there is God's mercies. And in fact, he's opened up by speaking about the mercies of God. And I'm not wanting to put those to one side, but the focus this morning is it's on our part of the equation. What are we doing as far as change is concerned? It's not about perfection. It's all about change. So a key question is, are we really wanting to change? Do we really want to change? Yeah, the writer of the Hebrews, in Hebrews 11 and verse 25, he sort of portrays sin and he says it's fleeting pleasures. And it is. Sin is pleasurable. Yeah, sin is pleasurable. Not having to change and just being who we are, in a sense, there is a level of pleasure about that. And obviously, with sin, there is pleasure. The writer to the Hebrews tells us, we know from personal experience, that sin is pleasurable. And that's a challenge because pleasure is one of our emotions. So we've got to sort of get some logic to overcome that emotion. I'll speak more about that shortly. The writer to the Hebrews in the 12th chapter goes on and says, well, sin sort of easily entangles us. Yeah, it trips us up. It's around us all the time. So therein lies another challenge as well. So sin is close by and sin is pleasurable. The same writer then says, well, if that's the case, then what we need to do is we need to cast aside or lay off every weight. And so therein lies another question. Are we laying aside every weight? Or is it a case that, in a sense, there's a level of comfort of sin in our lives? Maybe we've eradicated certain things, but certain things we're sort of very comfortable for sin to be there. And so I guess that's why when we sort of focus a little bit more, and if you've got your Bibles, hopefully they're still open at Romans chapter 12. Did you note the way in which Paul opened Romans chapter 12? And I'm going to just quote, if I may, from the New Living Translation. The New Living Translation actually says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you. So Paul is actually pleading. He's pleading with us in view of God's mercies, or as the NLT says, because of all that God has done for us. Just stop and think about that for a moment. All of the things that God has done for us. So if we had to sort of itemize, what's God done for us? Well, the very fact for us is we've got a wonderful hope. Yeah, he sent Jesus to this earth. We're part of that. Our association with Christ binds us together in fellowship with God, with Christ, and it gives us a wonderful hope. A wonderful hope of a coming kingdom. Coming kingdom when all things will be new. Behold, in Revelation it says, I make all things new. No more sorrow, no more sorrow, no more death. Those former things are passed away. Bolt onto that the forgiveness, the mercies, the grace. The fact that God has said in Hebrews 13 that I will never leave you nor forsake you. Hey, that's just a starting list. You could sort of embellish that. You could continue and go right through. In fact, that in itself is a topic. What has God done for us? So think about what God has done for us. God has given us everything to set us up for success. What's required of us? Well, Paul says here, well, what you need to do is it's all about becoming a living sacrifice. It's all about holiness, but it's all about our worship of God. I really do like that word, living sacrifice. It's what we would call an oxymoron. You know, sacrifices are dead, but this is a living. It's life and it's death. And in fact, for oxymorons, we can sort of talk about deafening silence and seriously funny. So these are opposite ends, things that don't ordinarily go together. But Paul says that we need to be a living sacrifice. So what does that actually mean if it's a living sacrifice? I think Brother Bob Lloyd has a great definition, a real rubber meets the road definition. He says, we sacrifice when we don't do what we want to do. Think about that. That sort of puts sacrifice in. Sacrifice is when we don't do what we want to do. And there are so many things in our life that we might want to do it. Brother Bob's saying, well, yeah, if you're sort of making that conscious decision, I'm not going to do that, that's when you are starting to make a sacrifice. Won't explore this, but Paul on many occasions said of the necessity of crucifying the desires of the flesh. Yeah, in Romans chapter 6, he went at great lengths to say we've changed masters. To the Galatians, he also said much the same. But I really like this succinct way in which he says in 1 Corinthians 15 and at verse 31, he says, I die daily. So every day he says, I'm dying. Yeah, the outward man needs to be dying and there needs to be that renewal within. That's the challenge for all of us. Are we dying daily? Are we that living sacrifice? That's part of the change process. Remember, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Do we actually want to put on that incorruptibility? That's the question that we need to ask ourselves. It's all about worship. The word worship is an interesting word too. It comes from the English, meaning that it's got worth. That's really what it is. So something is of worth, something of value. Do we actually place value? Remember, and I'm linking that because that's really important. Do we place value on the worship towards God? Is there a value? That's the derivation of that word. It's all about whether we place worth. Do we place worth with God and therefore worship him? Or do we worship idols? And again, that's the challenge. And that's really where in verse 2, Paul's going to start to unpack that particular issue for us. This issue of conformity to the world. I guess it's a challenge for us living in this world. Disciples are called upon to be different. We know that. There's plenty of passages. Matthew 6 sort of says, well, you can't serve God and mammon. There's this sort of bifurcation. You know, it's a 1-0 type binary approach is really what's presented. John, I think, though, really starts to get to what the world actually is. We won't turn to it because immediately I know your minds will have gone to 1 John chapter 2. And John says, all that is in the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. All of that, he said, that's what the world. If you want to sort of have a banner that says what the world is, all. That there is no sort of, there's a small, nice part, all that is in the world. And John further goes on to say that that's not of the Father. But he that does the will of the Father shall abide forever. And he speaks about the world and he says the world is passing away. But God is eternal. And I think that's really the challenge. And that's what we need to say when we start to look at this issue of conformity to the world. And I'm not going to say to you what's conforming and what's not. I think within our own minds, we have a fairly good idea. We know what the Bible says. We know what the scriptures say about many aspects. And indeed, you know, what we read this morning in Romans 12, and by the way, Matt, and I'm sure you picked it up as we went through the commandment of Christ found its way, I think it was verse 18. So Matt took us to another place, but verse 18 captured very nicely importance of the commandment that we considered this morning. So I'm not going to say to you what's conformity to the world. I think we've perhaps got a good handle. Theoretically, we know what that is. One thing that I'll say, though, is knowledge does not equate to practice. You know, I say that, again, to students all the time. You know, knowledge does not equate to practice. Just because this is the theoretical construct, we understand that, that does not necessarily mean that we're going to apply it. So that's something that you can think about in your own lives and to think, am I being conformed to this world? Because the challenge is, as Paul goes on to say, is he says, we need to be transformed. We need to be changed. And of course, that change process, it's not just a once-off. It's not just a case, you know, at time of baptism, that was it. It'd be nice if that was it and the process was, in a sense, done. That's the beginning of that process. It's tough, it's hard, it's arduous. But Jesus actually told us much the same. But you know what? In a secular sense, if you want to be successful in life, it's generally tough, it's hard, and it's arduous. Success always comes with a price. It's tough, it's hard, and it's arduous. You know, if we want to have success, then that's what you sign up for. And that's really what Paul is saying here. It is going to be hard. Really love this quote, and in fact, I really appreciate Graham. Graham and I often have a few chats, and let me just say, just as a tangential aspect, it's great to have fellow brothers and sisters that you can sort of, I'm going to say, chew the fat with at different times. That's something that I really treasure, and I know many of you here do the same. When I spoke to Graham and said, look, I'm going to speak about Romans chapter 12, It's amazing just little pithy phrases that come back. And Graham actually said to me, look, do you know what? There's this old English brother. Yes, old. Well, yeah, obviously where Graham is now, he's obviously older than Graham, so he's definitely old. And this particular brother said, the Bible is for transformation, not information. Think about that. Think about that. And that's really what it is, isn't it? That's what Paul's telling us here. It's all about transformation. It's not about he who knows all the kings of Israel wins the prize, or Judah, or whatever else. It's not about us knowing, you know, so many chapters, so many verses. Have you applied that Bible? Is that Bible penetrating your heart? And this is really the process that Paul's saying here. Yeah, we need to be transformed. How are we transformed? Well, the process of transformation, it's all about the mind. And, of course, that's what he goes on to say. He says it's by the renewal of our mind. Has anybody heard of George Bernard Shaw? I guess if you're English, you probably will. If you studied English literature at school, you probably have. For those who are sort of under about 40, you're probably saying, who? I just want to share this quote of George Bernard Shaw. He's a reasonably famous individual. If you've never, ever heard of him, jot his name down, have a bit of a look. Don't read all of his material. But here's what he actually said, because it encapsulates and pulls together very nicely exactly what Paul is saying. He says, progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. And I think that's always good just to have a level of reinforcement. Not so much to say, well, I don't believe the scriptures, but here's somebody else who's also just sort of pulling that together and sort of saying, hey, you know what? It really does come down to the mind. We know that to be the case because Paul tells us that here. He says also in Philippians 2 and at verse 5, let this mind be in you which was in Christ. So we know the power of the mind. And that's really important. It's the power of the mind. Maybe our first thought, you can't change your first thought, but you can your second. And that's the aspect to think about. So why then is change so difficult? Why is it that we find change difficult? And again, what I'd just like to share with you is just a couple of things that the field of psychology says with regards to change. Now, I'm not going to go right out to that lefty type approach, but I think that there is some really good points that psychology says that helps us to explain why we don't change. And I want to just share just a couple of these with you. And then when we finish that, let's have an action plan. Let's have an action plan moving forward that says, okay, here's where we are. How can we get some change happening in our life? So that's where we're going for the rest of the exhort. So why don't we want to embrace change? Well, one of the things that psychologists tell us is we tend to look at change as one big thing. So we look at the whole thing and sort of say, oh, look, this is what I've got to do. And what does that immediately say? All of a sudden, you're overwhelmed. It's just too daunting. It's too difficult. Remember that adage, if you want to eat an elephant, and you do it one bite at a time. So that's just sort of putting things into perspective. If we sort of see this whole situation in front of us, we're defeated. And maybe we sort of see some of the challenges in our own lives of sin, etc., and we say, oh, look, this is just such a big thing. I'm just never, ever going to defeat this. It's sort of one step at a time. We won't turn to it, but you'll be familiar with the words of Peter in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 to 8. And he sort of says, make every effort to add to your faith virtue and not. Do you remember that little section? He sort of has this little stepping stone. He sort of puts on a whole lot of planks. So it's 2 Peter 1, verses 5 to 8. And what Peter actually says is that this is a gradual process. This is a brick by brick sort of type arrangement. That's how you become successful. Don't just sort of see it as this sort of, I'm just never ever going to overcome it. We can boil that down to say it's all about micro changes. So micro changes, micro habits. Good book, by the way, for people who like to read. There's a book called Atomic Habits. So if you do a Google, you'll find that great little book that sort of just helps you along as far as change is concerned. The second point I want to say with regards to change is it requires effort and habit. It's a daily process. We've really, in a sense, already spoken about that, but this is exactly what the psychology literature says, that it requires effort and habit. It comes at a cost. There's discomfort. And that's exactly what Jesus said to us. You know, if you want to follow him, you've got to deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me. You know, they're not really, really palatable things. Denying self. We always think self is number one. Who wants to take up a cross? The cross does not speak of anything that is palatable. Hey, the crown does, but Jesus said it's the cross before the crown. The third point that psychologists say is we don't want it that bad. Yeah, I'll do it someday. Maybe you've been a bit like me at different times. Yeah, you want to lose weight and you sort of think, or give up Coca-Cola. That was a big one for me. And now I don't have diabetes, and I sort of, for years, you'd go to the doctor, and the doctor say, look, you probably should give up Coke. And you get to a point and you sort of say, nah, look, I'm enjoying it too much. I don't want to give it up. Don't like the taste of the no sugar. I'll do it someday. We're delaying it. Why? It's that comfort zone issue that we said before. So sometimes we've just got to take a good, hard, long look in the mirror. Remember, nothing changes if nothing changes. And this perhaps leads on to the next point, and that is we live in a day and age where we want immediacy. We want immediate results. You know, these days, Google knows everything. If you don't understand anything, bang, you just type into Google and Google tells you. We want instantaneous results. When you make changes in your life, let's say we're talking behavioural changes, and the behaviour might be that I won't be as angry. I won't be perhaps as angry as what I normally am. I won't have a short fuse. It's going to take a little bit of practice. It's not something you suddenly say, well, this is the week, no anger. Because you're still going to be confronted with circumstances that in the past have been the trigger points for you to suddenly become angry. But what it does require is, of course, the recognition. You know, progress is slow. But of course, all that we're asked is that there is change. It's not that we have to be flying along at 100 miles an hour or whatever. All that Paul is saying here in Romans is there a transformation? Is there a change? If we can look back over time, if I could turn back time, is it a case that there has been that slow, steady, upward trend? That's really what's being asked. And you know, that's exactly what Jesus has said to us as well. Remember the parable of the talents. Somebody got five, somebody got two, and somebody got one. The five became ten, the two became four. Jesus said, that's fantastic. There was progress that was made. The individual who didn't do anything, why didn't he do anything? Well, he didn't do anything. He says to Jesus, or in the parable, Jesus says, I fear because you are an austere man, you're a hard individual. I didn't want to do anything. And that's another reason why people don't do anything. It's because of fear. Fear, there's procrastination. People procrastinate. The reason they procrastinate is they're fearful. They're perhaps also disappointed that they're not going to get the immediacy of success. So I think the key takeaway from what's being told is that change is difficult. But remember, we're not called upon to make this huge, huge, momentous change all at once. Slow and steady wins the race. And the final point I want to make is with regards to logic and emotion. And I did sort of allude to that a little earlier. They're not aligned. I would like to say, and I know people will beg to the... I'd like to say that I'm a fairly logical person. That's what I'd like to say. Your views might be different, but I'd like to say that. I'd like to say that emotion doesn't rule and make all the decisions, and that, you know, I like to sort of say that everything's laid out in this process. Very process-driven in a sense. That's what I'd like to say. But you know what? Even if you are process-driven, even if you say you're logical, underpinning that, it's really emotions that come in. It's the emotions. And so what I do is I put a superficial layer over the top that says, hey, I'm just a logical person. For all of us, it's emotions. And the four emotions that are perhaps the most strongest in our lives, enjoyment, anger, fear, and sadness. Think about those. And again, we won't be able to explore all of those this morning, but the scriptures actually deal time and time again with that. Enjoyment, we might sort of say, what I said earlier, sin is pleasurable. We enjoy it. So these are the top four that psychologists say we look for enjoyment. So there's sort of that DNA wiring. That's why there needs to be the renewal of the mind with what Paul spoke about here. Renewing our mind. There needs to be a changing from what comes natural. So that's what the literature tells us. Change is difficult. So how are we going to do things? Why is today going to be different for you? Just think about that. So why is our meeting today? What are you going to do from today onwards? So what resolutions? Doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We cannot change the past. We can seek forgiveness. We can ask for God's help that really we want to change. Remember, nothing changes if nothing changes. So from today, what sort of resolutions could you actually make? What sort of micro changes? It's not about flipping the switch and all of a sudden you're there, but something that you can suddenly say, what could I do? Think about this. For most of us, if I was to ask you the question, if you were to do one thing in your lives that would make a difference, what would that be? You might not instantaneously know the answer, but given a bit of thought, most of us will know what it is. And I would venture to say that most of us who are sitting here this morning, we will know that there are certain things that we grapple with. There's a certain issue. Don't have to solve the problem in its entirety. We seek forgiveness, we ask for strength, we ask for guidance, but what we actually do is we say, I'm going to make that change. That's the transformation process that we're reading about here in Romans chapter 12. So how can we make this momentum for change? Four things are required to make change occur. First of all, there is the recognition of the need. You've got to recognise the need. In other words, you've got to say, I've got this problem, I've got this challenge, I want to change. There has to be the recognition. You've got to bring that to the forefront. It's not just about being conformed, as we read earlier. We have to want to make the change. Don't be conformed. We need to be transformed. So first is recognition of the need. The second is to develop a vision. And by the way, these four that I'm unpacking and giving to you, this is what secular literature says. Obviously, we've got an application that we can have this morning and that we can take spiritually. You need to develop a vision. Perhaps you're thinking of what the kingdom could be like. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 9, you know, eyes and ears haven't seen or heard what this kingdom is going to be like. We alluded earlier to Revelation 21. Think of the wonderful glories of Revelation 21. Perhaps it's Psalm 72. Whatever it happens to be, what we do need to do is we need to have a vision. From the vision, we then need to take action. We've got to take action. It's not just about saying with lip service, yes, I want the kingdom. Yes, I believe in Jesus. Yep, they're starting points. What are we actually doing? What progress are we making? Remember, we don't have to solve all of this problem right now. And indeed, up until Christ's return, all of us are going to be struggling. We're going to be challenged. But remember, nothing changes if nothing changes. And the fourth and the final point is that we need to embed it, and I'm going to just use the secular words, we need to embed it in part of our culture or part of our DNA. What does that actually mean? It means that we need to embrace the whole change. And so the small step that we make then enables us to make another step and another step. And so change takes place and we move away from the comfort zone and we start to embrace the change that we know is required. So I guess that's the challenge for all of us this morning. All of us this morning is to, we gather here, we reflect upon our lives. We are truly thankful of the grace, the mercy and the forgiveness that is available to us. But what our Lord has also required of us is that we have lives that try to conform to his example. May this then be a week of service to him and a week whereby we make just a small change in our lives. Thank you.